I'm Joe Lurie, and this is the Graham Sham podcast series on Kaya FM.
Welcome to the Graham Sham on Kaya. I'm Joe Lurie. On Youth Day, one of the Graham Sham posts that made the most impact came from Letsego Zulu, where she said, "Yes, you see me smiling. Yes, you see me laughing. Yes, I look like everything is all right. Truth, the heart bleeds and the tears flow." Sure, that's very deep. Letsego is joining me in studio today. Welcome.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
That made a huge impact on a lot of people. And when I was reading that last night and reading it now again, it really gets you because I think that speaks to a lot of people for a lot of different experiences. But when you think of what you were going through at the time, and I know that the picture you were referring to was 3 or 4 months after your husband had passed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can almost feel the lump in your throat that you were feeling at that time, biting back tears. Mm. So you spoke about smiling through the tears and pushing through the pain. Does that sum up like how you made it through the past 2 years?
It does sum up how I made it through the past 2 years. And for me, it's not necessarily about putting on a brave face for the public. Mm. For me, the one person that I do this for is my daughter.
Yeah.
And it has been that from the beginning. I have never wanted to impose any of my feelings and emotions onto her. So, you know, even 2 days after her dad passed away, 2-3 days after her dad passed away, I would smile at my daughter. You know, I want her to learn of her dad's passing. I mean, she was only just one. She had just turned one at the time. So she obviously had no understanding of what had happened. And she'll learn of it as time goes. But I'm one person that's very, very conscious of what I put out there. And more specifically for my daughter. My own dad passed away when I was 2 years old. Oh. And
so that is like an awful part of history repeating itself.
Absolutely. Yeah. And my mom never imposed any of her feelings onto me. In actual fact, we probably only started having our first conversation about my dad when I was about 16 years old, you know, I'd see my friends with both moms and dads. Not that I didn't know growing up that, you know, a household has a mom and a dad. I think I grew up just being filled, you know, in a home that's just full of love. My mom's sisters, my mom's brothers, I had enough love to go around. And, you know, only when I was about 16, 17, I then asked my mom what happened to my dad.
So what is that like? You know, so obviously with your daughter being so little, she's around you a lot and you feel the need to be extra present because you are her primary source of love and care, except for obviously the extended family. How do you keep that strength up in front of her?
So obviously now, 2 years down the line, I'm in a different space.
Yes, yeah.
I've accepted that Gugu had to go. It was his turn, you know. The truth of the matter is we all come into this world alone and we'll all depart on our own.
Yeah.
And having gone through this experience particularly, I mean, of course I had lost so many people prior to that, family members and friends along the way. But when something hits you so close, it leaves you with certain lessons about life. And, you know, acceptance is one of those things that is humanly, I don't want to say impossible, it's just generally tough for humans to accept that this is the cycle of life. I'm in a different space now. I smile because I want to smile. I smile because I choose to press the reset button every single day and experience each day as it comes.
And because things make you smile.
Exactly, exactly. And I choose to be present in life and experience everything as it's laid out in front of me.
Yeah.
Because holding on to the past will but only keep you in the past.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that I've forgotten about my late husband.
Yeah.
In actual fact, the one thing that I often say in public to people is, I'm not mourning his passing. I don't mourn. I choose to celebrate.
Hmm.
I had him for 16 and a half years. And at the time of his passing, that was literally half my life. And that's a gift. That's a God-given gift, you know? So when it comes to...
It's a huge gift, yeah.
Yeah, so the one thing I often say to people is, you know, the way you view life and the different challenges that you get thrown at you kind of paves the way of how you're going to deal with life.
Hmm.
I, somewhere, you know, probably about 2, 3, 4 months after Gugu passed away, chose to look at it as a celebration of his life.
I think that also is testament to the partnership you had and the tools you gave each other and the strength you gave each other. I think that speaks volumes of the confidence you built in each other.
Absolutely. I mean, Gugu and I were inseparable. Mm. We dated for 13 years.
Sure. That takes a strong woman.
And a very patient one,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, wow.
We dated for 13 years, you know. A lot of people, you know, would say to me, he was your everything. How are you managing to live life? No, he wasn't my everything. He was part of my life. He was part of my story, and I was part of his. And yes, till today, the tears do flow, and I allow them to flow.
Mm.
I'll be driving down, you know, Jan Smuts or Witkoppen or whatever it may be, and one of his favorite songs will come on the radio. Unfortunately, that's something that will hit me even 10 years down the line. And I'll break down and cry, you know, but that's life.
And you don't stop yourself because you got to just let it go. Yeah.
I don't stop myself. I'll reach for that tissue and I'll wipe my tears and I'll continue.
So, you know, you lived a big chunk of your beautiful 16 and a half year love story with Gugu in the public eye. And you did that very generously. And that seemed to continue through the grieving. Did you grapple with that decision to continue to share him with the public? I mean, I saw it almost immediately. It seamlessly just stayed in the public. Did you selfishly want to pull back and go, no, I'm keeping this for myself now?
Initially, I wanted to be selfish and keep it to myself and literally just shut down and switch off and get off all social media and I guess deal with the loss on my own. But he was such a public person. He was loved by
so many
people, you know, not just South Africans, people across the world. You know, one of the things he often used to say to me was, don't be afraid to be selfish with yourself. Hence, initially, I wanted to be selfish with this process.
Yeah.
But I think just the outpouring of love from everybody, and it still continues till today, two years down the line, I still get that complete stranger that will walk up to me in a shopping mall and want to give me a hug, and I understand why they're giving me that hug, and it's always welcome. You know, I'll walk into a supermarket and the manager will come and hand me a bouquet of flowers.
Well, that's what I want to ask you. So, like, grief, we all go through it at some stage. There's nobody who's exempt from loss. We mostly do it very privately. Mm. I mean, grief and mourning rituals are very private things. Mm. There are very few people who've had to do it so publicly. The way that Gugu passed and it being, you know, part of the, on Mandela Day, I mean, it just was, it couldn't have been more public
than that.
Sharing this with the public, did it make it harder or easier?
You know, I chose to do it my way. Yes, it was public. There was a lot of, what do I call it? Sure. I from what I understand, in those first 2 to 3 weeks, there were huge debates amongst people that I chose not to listen to.
Mm.
There were, you know, conversations on radio. There were newspaper articles. There were social media posts about the way I chose to I don't want to say grief because I didn't grieve. I choose not to grieve. But the way I handled myself as an African woman, because we supposedly meant to grieve in a certain way. But, you know, the way I was brought up, the way my mom brought me up, she brought me up to be an individual, to do things my way, to not be afraid to go against the grain. And I particularly remember a letter that my mom wrote to me. I think I must have been in standard two, standard three. See, now I'm giving away my age with the standards. But I was in boarding school from, okay, let me be current, from grade four till matric. I was in boarding school. And of course, you know, when your parents are so far from you, they don't know how you're grappling with, you know, with teenage pressures and all of that. And my mom used to write letters to me. And I remember the one letter that she particularly wrote to me where she literally said to me, you know what, remember you came into this world alone. Don't be afraid to stand on your own. Don't be afraid to do things your way. Don't be afraid to stand out like a sore thumb. And I've grown up with that mentality. Mm-hmm. I do things my way. I chose to stand up at my husband's funeral and speak. I chose to come back onto social media 3 to 4 weeks after he passed away. In actual fact, I was scrolling down on my Instagram, and I'll show you after this. I was scrolling down on my Instagram to the very first post that I posted after he passed away. I think it was about three weeks after. In actual fact, it was on Women's Day, because he passed away on the 18th of July. It was on Women's Day. And I was at a fitness event wearing leggings and a top that, you know, if I raise my arm, my midriff got exposed. And I stood in a certain way where my midriff was exposed. And I remember looking at that picture and thinking, he would have said, oh, yes, baby, that's a hot picture. And I actually posted that particular picture with that in mind, you know. Goodness gracious me, I was never ready for those responses. Mm. There were a good 200 responses on that particular post. And all I do is I just read. I read and I don't allow anything to affect me. But you know, with social media, there are always people out there with their mm-hmm. guns ready to shoot at people. So the negative posts were dealt with by my fellow social media friends.
They'll take them down. They'll go savage on them.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. But for me, what really blew my mind is how people feel they have this entitlement.
Their ownership.
An ownership.
Even of your grief.
Of your life.
Yeah.
In general. And, oh man, I just read and I just smile and I move right along and I say, bless you.
But that's actually one of the things I really wanted to talk about today is, did you find that people were auditing your emotions? So it was like, don't be too happy too soon. You're too happy too soon. Don't be too sad for too long. And almost like, I mean, this would make me want to scream, but a sense of strangers telling you Gugu would want you to be happy now. Like Gugu, you know, wouldn't want you to be sad for too long. And I mean, who would know better what Gugu would want for you than you?
Exactly. All I can tell you is, you know, for 16 and a half years, having that special man in my life, I was always smiling.
Hmm.
If I ever had a dull moment and, you know, things weren't going too well at work or whatever it may be, he would work very hard on a daily basis to make sure that I'm smiling. And with that being said, I know that he'd want me to be happy. And mm-hmm. anything and everything that I could possibly do to keep myself happy, he would want me to.
The adventure couple.
Exactly. And I clearly remember a phone call that I received from a friend, I think about 2 weeks after he passed away. She called me and I remember exactly where I was driving. I was on Jan Smuts and I was passing Hyde Park. You know that Jan Smuts and yes. William Nicol yeah. intersection. My phone rang and my friend says to me, how was your day? And I said, it's been okay. You know, I wasn't back at work yet and I had had a day of pampering. You know, I went and got my hair done and my nails done. And she says to me, did you go to the gym today? And I'm like, no. Did you ride your bike? I'm like, no. Did you go for a run? And I said, no. Why all these fitness questions? And she says, when last did you do any form of physical activity? And I said to her, the day I ran down Kilimanjaro. And she says to me, do you know that Gugu is up there in heaven looking down at you, shaking his head, because you are not doing that one thing that makes you happy? And that phone call was
jolted
the biggest
you.
Smack in my face and the biggest reminder that that happy soul who passed away would only but want happiness for me.
Yeah. I mean, why would he want anything else?
Exactly.
Why would he want anything else? Do you find so this presence on social media, and you know, you have been quite like militant in a way of staying on social media and keeping a very happy presence on social media. And I think that people, you know, are voyeurs and they almost want to see pain on social media and they want to see the sadness. And you have been so good about maintaining your life on social media and maintaining your identity as Letsego and not Gugu's widow on social media. Mm. And you honor him and pay tribute to him and respect him on social media when it's appropriate, mm-hmm. but you maintain your identity. Mm. But do you find that there must be days where it takes all your earthly strength to get out of bed and be happy, because there must be days where it's difficult, or there must be days where you think of him and you're a little bit sad, and then somebody tags you in something or wants to be sad about Gugu on social media or something like that. And does it bother you that people are able to access your emotions through a platform and they may not even know who you are? They're strangers to you?
Gosh, I get inboxes all the time. Inboxes on my Instagram, my Twitter, and it's exactly that, you know, people imposing their sadness onto me. I don't think they realize that they're imposing.
It's well meaning. It's for the most part, I think it's well meaning, and in other ways, I think it's just as people are grief thieves as well. They kind of want to attach themselves to other people's emotions.
No, absolutely. But you know, Joe, my biggest thing that gets me moving and living life on a daily basis is the truth of the matter is that the clock keeps ticking.
Yep.
It doesn't stop. The clock keeps ticking. Life's got to be lived. And one's just got to keep marching forward. Yes. I've got a daily reminder of Gugu, and that's our daughter.
I look at her
every single day, you know, but I make a conscious effort to be present in life currently. I choose not to be held up in what happened 2 years ago. Mm. In actual fact, in our household, we keep him alive, very much so, because we've got pictures on the walls. And she's three now. 2 years later, she still knows and remembers that that's daddy.
Yeah.
So we treat him like he's alive in, you know, in our household. And it's the norm,
yeah.
You know, because the truth of the matter is, one, well, I choose not to grieve.
Yeah.
I choose to constantly celebrate him. And that's why I will go and ride crazy 8-day mountain bike races, you know, in
you
his
said
memory.
It's crazy. You I know, I'm used crazy. The word crazy. But your relationship doesn't end after 16 and a half years. Your relationship with Gugu continues.
For
like
life.
Your love affair continues. That's it. It's like, it's not like you broke up. You know, it continues.
Yeah.
So,
although Home Affairs has it differently.
Well, Home Affairs doesn't exactly have feelings.
I was told by a Home Affairs official that, oh no, there's no marriage here anymore.
Wow.
Absolutely.
They have real empathy. They operate with real
None.
Empathy.
None. But the truth of the matter is, you know, life's got to be lived. He would want me to be happy. And God willing, somewhere down the line, I'll meet somebody new or he'll send somebody for me.
Yeah.
You know, and
well, things are as they're meant to be. I mean,
exactly.
It's no coincidence that a little baby was left behind. Like it was all the way it was meant to be.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Speaking of your daughter, you know, this whole concept of it's okay not to be okay. Mm. How do you teach that to your child? Because the natural instinct as a mother is to make everything okay. You know, your child hurts herself, you kiss it better, you want the tears to be gone, you want everything to be okay. How do you teach your child it's okay not to be okay?
My parenting style is very different. When my daughter falls, I don't run to her. I stand right where I am, I crouch down to her level and I say, come tell mommy what happened.
It must be hard.
No, not at all. You know, the truth is, kids will be kids. Kids will fall. Kids, you know, things will break. They'll hurt themselves. I don't know where I get it from because I've never been a mom before. But that's my parenting style. And if she cries, I crouch down to her and I said, come tell mommy, what's wrong? Why are you crying?
Hmm.
You know? But it's also okay to let the tears flow because I've realized there are times when I want to try and wipe her tears away and she says no, which is a good thing. Yeah. Let the tears flow, my baby girl.
Well, I think as women, I think we bite the tears back and we put so much pressure on ourselves to bury our feelings. Mm. And I think that's a lot of the response you got on that Gramsham post was like this collective sigh of relief, like, oh, it's okay, it's all right, like to just let it go a little bit. Like people were so surprised that it was okay to not be perfect all the time. Do you think, so I mean, in your case, you say you suck it up for your daughter because that's, you know, you have to do that. In general, do you think that this putting on a brave face is a coping mechanism for ourselves to stay in control, or is it to make others feel more comfortable, or is it simply to shut others out because our pain is private?
I think very often we do it for other people.
Hmm.
You know, you want to be viewed a certain way, and it's not healthy.
It isn't healthy.
It's not healthy because the more you bottle things up, you know, that one dreadful day, there will be an explosion.
Yeah.
You have to let it flow. You have to just let things happen the way they are meant to. I remember, I can't even remember how many months after Gugu passed away, but I was driving with my business partner. Luckily, she was driving and I was in the passenger seat. And I read something on a street poster and I just burst into tears. And she just allowed me to. She quietly turned down the radio. And we continued. 5 minutes later, she said, are you okay? You know, you have to just let it be. Let it happen. Bottling things up or carrying yourself a certain way for other people is one of the most unhealthiest things. You need to learn to be selfish with yourself. And if it means grieving in private, then do so. You know, it was my choice to do it in the public eye purely because we were public people.
Yeah, it was your choice, but also it was...
Okay, part of it wasn't.
I mean, did you really have much choice?
I kind of ran with it because of what it was.
Yeah, I mean, it was your choice. And at the same time, he was just, your husband was so adored.
Absolutely.
It just, I mean, you would have been incredibly unpopular if you had snatched that away from the country in a way. Like, people just, you know, people wanted to just pour out their love.
Absolutely.
You know? I think people felt bereaved. They just, it was a very sad thing that happened for everyone. But then it was also, I think, why I felt for you was, besides your loss, was that, you know, people wanted something to offload their sadness onto. Mm. And then you became the receptacle for everyone's sadness. So I just, you know, I was at a studio the one day waiting to go and do an interview. And it was a couple of weeks after Gugu had passed and you went to go do an interview on Anele's show.
Mm.
And I just remember seeing people, you know, falling all over you, basically. And I just thought, you know, I just felt for you because I'm just like, I couldn't think of anything worse than having people crowding me at a time like that. And you were so gracious about it.
Mm.
But I just thought that it's just like, it's almost intrusive. It's borderline intrusive.
It is, but I think at the time I understood that I'm not the only one grieving. He was loved by so many people.
You are unselfish. You're a much better person than I am.
Yeah, no, he was my gugu, but he was everybody else's gugu.
Yeah.
but you know, with my personal healing process, I, somewhere down the line, chose to distance myself from certain people that I felt were taking me five steps back.
Yeah. Yeah, because you were ready. Well, I'm
trying to move forward.
Everyone heals at a different pace. And
absolutely.
The thing is, it's like running a marathon or cycling a race. Everyone does it at a different pace. Yeah. And now you are being dragged back with the rest of the pack.
Exactly.
And it's hard because, you know, there's some people you'll bump into at a supermarket who haven't had a chance yet to offload it onto you. Mm-hmm. And 2 years later, they're now going to start crying.
Yeah.
Because they haven't had a chance yet to do it. And I think it's just people need to write a nice letter, you know, and you can open it at your pace. I think it's people need to be more sensitive to that fact.
Yeah, but also one thing I've learned about grief and loss is that one doesn't really understand it if they haven't gone through it. And, you know, in the past 2 years, I've probably had maybe two or three times where I went on Facebook in particular and I wrote the do's and don'ts dealing with someone that's lost a significant other.
Yeah.
Things to say, things not to say.
Yeah.
I think it was more focused on things not to say.
Yeah.
Or things not to do. Because people just don't understand. They can't really put themselves in your shoes.
I think you should write a book. I'm serious.
I have started.
Good. I think you should write a book. I think it's exceptionally important. I think, you know, besides the fact that we all have cultural differences when it comes to that sort of stuff, in terms of empathy and emotional intelligence, I think people really lack when it comes to grief.
Yeah.
And how we do it differently, and when you're the person who is trying to move on with their life, and moving on doesn't mean leaving behind the memory of.
Yeah, and it also doesn't mean that you forget the person. It doesn't mean that you're trying to wipe them off your memory.
It doesn't mean you can't mention Gugu. I mean, Gugu must be mentioned in your life a million times a day.
Yeah,
he is part of your daily existence. You can never get away from them. You would never want to get away
from
it. But, you know, sorry for your loss 2 years later is not helpful.
No. No, it's not. But, I think education is
please write the
key.
Book. We will all support it.
It's key. We all deal with these things differently. People are still crying 2 years down the line. People will probably still be crying 5 years down the line. And I just have to live with it.
Yeah, look, it's testament to what an amazing man he was.
Absolutely.
And he was an amazing man.
Mm. I mean, I received an inbox message a few days ago from someone who lives in Seoul. And they had bumped into a fellow South African and they got excited because, you know, you're so far away from home and you're meeting a fellow South African. And immediately they started talking about Gugu. 2 years down the line. And you know what? It's not a bad thing.
It isn't a bad thing.
It just shows that he impacted so many people's lives positively.
It isn't a bad thing. It means he'll be kept alive forever.
Exactly.
But it's just how people approach you and the boundaries around that should be maintained.
But also, you know, talking about how people approach you and almost encroach on your space, that whole thing of, oh no, you'll never find another man like Gugu. People say the darndest
things. I mean, that's almost like a curse. I mean, you'd like to think that your husband will have a part in like blessing you with that.
You know, not that I'm actively out there. I'm not saying I'm in the market or anything. I'm just saying
this is not an invitation.
Applications. No, definitely not. But it's incredible how people almost want to dictate to you.
And social media plays a very big part in that, because I feel like social media feels like your followers feel like they're stakeholders.
In your life.
In your life, right? So you have a substantial following, mm. and which means you now have shareholders. Like, they are shareholders in Letsego Inc. Like, you now have, it's like you need to put it up for vote. Like, may I date now? Because
no,
heaven,
you are not ready.
Heaven forbid, you need to like have a poll, an Instagram poll. Like, may I date now? Is this man good enough for me? Because if he's not, like, I know that you're all going to have something to say about it. It's terrible. Social media really has, in a way, I mean, it's fantastic, because in a way, social media has given you a platform to invite people into the areas of your life you want to have them in. Mm. But it's also invited them into a whole bunch of areas that they don't have any business in. Especially, look, when you and Google invited South Africa into your life, into your wedding, you know, into your trips, you never expected that they'd be invited into this part of your life. You never saw this coming. Yeah. So now they became part of your, you know, your loss, which now invites them into this next chapter of your life. Like, what happens if you meet someone? So, despair for you.
No, like I said, I can just smile and wave.
You're going to have to go into the witness protection program if you meet anyone. Okay, let's talk about, like, your release. I know you love exercise. You have these amazing pop-up gyms.
Mm.
Plug it.
So I studied sports science and biokinetics, and I, you know, obviously specialized as a biokineticist, and I practiced for 5 years. But, you know, with being a biokineticist, you can only see one person per hour or per half an hour. So by the end of the day, you've only really touched 8 to 10 people. And I've got a passion for people. I've got a passion for helping people. And that passion came when I think I was, must have been about 19, 20 years old. And I was a manager at a Virgin Active. And, you know, I'd see so many people that would walk up to me asking me for help. And I thought to myself, 8 to 10 people per day is just not enough. I want to help people. So, you know, a friend of mine who I had shared my health and fitness passion with for many years said to me, I know someone else who's very passionate, you know, just as much as you. And he organized coffee for myself and my pop-up gym, my current pop-up gym partner, Ketiwe Mlangeni. And we had coffee, and that's essentially where the whole pop-up gym idea came about, to try and make this health and fitness thing fun for people. Yes, for me and her, it comes very naturally. We wake up every day and we're like, okay, what am I doing today? Am I boxing? Am I running? Am I cycling? Am I, you know, what am I doing today? But it's not like that for many people. A lot of people find health and fitness, they're almost treated like a chore, like that that one thing that, oh my gosh, I need to drag my feet. Apparently I need to do this thing.
Yes.
And with pop-up gym and the public activations that we do, it's essentially about bringing like-minded people that have some sort of passion for health and fitness, or would like to have a passion for health and fitness, come together, have a fitness party, you know, put on the Bluetooth headphones, the music comes straight to your ears.
It's like a little silent disco. I've seen it.
It's essentially a fitness silent disco, and you see how people just switch off and they're in their own worlds and they are dancing and they're just having fun, and they walk away 3 hours later after having exercised for 3 hours saying, oh my gosh, I didn't actually feel like I exercised for 3 hours.
3 hours. Oh my gosh.
That's essentially where pop-up gym comes from, and it's about moving people. Yes, the big thing that a lot of people share in the health and fitness industry is that whole 80% diet, 20% exercise. But the truth is, that's more focused on weight loss. The biggest thing that the World Health Organization is trying to push right now is the fact that we are not moving. The lack of movement is what is leading to the high blood pressures and the diabetes and all of these non-communicable diseases. So movement is actually much more important than
like fitness,
exactly.
Like
fitness,
health,
fitness. Move, even if it's just walking.
But 3 hours, I mean, it will be okay not to be okay after that.
It's 3 hours that's broken up. So we'll, for example, do 30 minutes of dance fitness, and then a 15-minute break for you to go and grab something to drink, and in between, you know, or during that 15 minutes, we'll be talking about the latest fad, or you know, whether it's green juices, or you know, or the latest fitness apparel. We do give you breaks in between.
Okay, I think so we must organize for the Graham Shammers to come and do a pop-up gym session.
Yes,
sure. Definitely will not be okay after that. Letsego, thank you so much for joining us on the Graham Sham today. I really loved having you, and I really hope that you write that book.
That the book is already in its second draft.
Fantastic.
I've been quietly writing it. I have not put it out there, but now the Graham Shammers know about it.
We will be waiting patiently, not so patiently, for that book. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's the Graham Sham for today.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Graham Sham podcast series with me, Joe Lurie.